This is Robotic Disclosure, the podcast that reveals everything you want to know about robotic surgery, robotic technology, and how to run a best practice program for your hospital, your surgeons, and your patients. I'm your host, Josh Feldstein. Support for Robotic Disclosure comes from Kava Robotics International, the leader in robotic program consulting, serving hospitals in the U.S. and around the world. Visit kava-robotics.com. This podcast series takes our listeners on a journey into the operating room, the hospital C-suite, the industry boardroom, the surgeon lounge, and more. Our guests are going to tell you about robotic surgery, about current and emerging robotic technologies, and how to run a world-class program for your patients, your surgeons, your hospital, and your community. I'm your host, Josh Feldstein. Our next guest, Dr. Russell Martin, is a robotic and laparoscopic general surgeon with a real passion for robotic cost-effectiveness and program efficiency. Dr. Martin is Medical Director of Robotic Surgery at St. Agnes Medical Center in Fresno, California, and he has received the Compassionate Doctor Award 4 years in a row and the Patient's Choice Award the past 3 years from Vitals. He was an invited faculty presenter at the SLS Minimally Invasive Surgery Week. Great to speak with you, Russ. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
Let's start off with the work that you're doing at St. Agnes as a robotic surgery director. How have you turned around the hospital's robotic program and guided it towards its current success?
So I came into a hospital system that had a robot since 2001. And they've seen their volume come and go. They actually started with cardiothoracic surgery using the very first Da Vinci S robot, or the standard robot. Surgeons came and left, and they had a slow, steady trickle of volume, probably about 15 to 25 cases per quarter for the last 10 years.
Not much.
So coming into this system, it basically was a broken program that was just floundering, you know, getting by, and they even stopped doing, you know, robotic steering committee meetings. So when I came in, I mandated that we had to start, you know, monthly robotic steering meetings. So that started again. I brought them, you know, of course, I had my own patients coming in. So, and then robotic surgery, just the plethora of surgeries or procedures that we could do on a robot, that was instantaneous volume. So within a matter of, you know, 3 months, I'd, you know, tripled their yearly volume. And then from there, you know, working with administration and really pounding the importance of the economics of the robot. And, you know, they were dealing with, you know, had a platform, the Da Vinci SI platform, which is, you know, 10 years old already. And, you know, failing parts, breaking down, taking time in the OR, delaying cases. So really pushed for them to get the current generation technology, just to get them up to speed. Mm-hmm. And that required a business plan. So, you know, presenting to them my incremental volume, in addition to the other surgeons coming on board that were interested in a revitalized program. Bringing those numbers to the table, looking at decreased length of stays for colorectal procedures, for complex ventral hernia procedures, and even more advanced procedures such as gastrectomies, you know, all malignant type general surgical procedures, and then even the benign procedures, the gallbladders, and So I showed that to him in the business plan as far as length of stay, average length of stay, you know, open versus laparoscopic versus robotic. Here's your average dollar amount from Premier data for your stay, average, you know, length of stay, your patient population for our area. And it's a no-brainer. It only made sense, you know, that the hospital would be making money and, you know, decreasing length of stay and having those available bed days per year, how many available bed days per year for extra patients to come into the hospital. Yes. So that right there sold it. Yes, sir.
That's a great summary. And I want to just underscore a couple of points to make sure it's clear. When you talk about ventrals and gastrectomies and malignant cases, and you talk about the advantage that the robotic procedure had versus a lap or an open procedure in some of these case types, when you started the dialogue with administration, Russ, it sounds like they were not aware of some of the advantages that robotics offered. And you educated them. You took administration to school. This is a common occurrence, would you agree? And the other piece of this is the data that you needed to support your argument, you referenced Premier data. Did you have any data from inside of St. Agnes Medical Center's IT department? And are you getting these kinds of performance data metrics now?
I completely agree with you. They did not know. So that's exactly, you know, where we are at now. So we've developed a dashboard to give us some of these metrics. And it's very elementary. Like I said, we just started, you know, basically just came on board rebooting this program. So we're looking at the basics of, you know, wheels in to wheels out, turnover time totals, you know, volume, costs for instrumentation per case, per service line.
Well, this sounds rudimentary, but the point is this is profound. I mean, this is the flip the lights on. This is a whole new era, really, of programmatic management. And how is the administration responding to all of this? What does supply chain say? What does finance say?
Yeah, it's amazing, actually. I've never been in a place where I've had so much support from the administration. Routinely having the chief operating officer and the chief medical officer in our meetings.
Right. That's huge.
And since I've come in, we've also brought in our marketing director. She sits in our meetings, gets to hear what we have to say, mm-hmm. Listens to where the direction where our program is going and where we need to go.
Fabulous.
So she knows what they have to, you know, project out to the public and, you know, to our providers.
So what you're describing is really a holistic integration of administration into the program. And this is an uncommon occurrence, as you know. I mean, you've seen inside of many, many robotic programs nationally, Russ, and you're well aware of the fact that having the C-suite and supply chain and marketing and clinical and all of the surgeons and all of the crew and so forth talking to each other and working together and participating. We say that robotics is a team sport, but it's an uncommon occurrence to actually have this happen. Your comments on that and what facilitated this type of holistic integration of administration?
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on. We do say that robotics is a team sport. All surgery, you know, patient care is a team sport, involving the patients to administration, to surgeons, to anesthesia, to scrub techs, to supply chain, you know, to the CFO. And I think just understanding that and being in, you know, having been to so many different hospitals where you see failing programs and getting the pieces together, and it's kind of corny, but really emphasizing that team sport. And, you know, sometimes if, you know, you don't have a team player, sometimes you need to get that person off the bus.
Right.
Or help them to maximize their potential, help them help themselves so they can help the program.
As the medical director of the program, if you've had outliers, if you've had people that haven't joined the program and are rowing in the same direction, what do you do?
The culture that I'm at our hospital is a very much it's a very encouraging culture.
Got it.
So if there's deficiencies, people are encouraged to correct them. And, you know, there's always the gossip in the OR. There's always the political arena between surgeons and groups and hospital systems and insurance status. But regardless, I think, you know, getting the people that are outliers and identifying that, it's critical. And that's actually one of the very first things that I came into the robotic steering committee meeting and tried to identify those outliers. Mm-hmm. In addition, we tried to find, surgeons with their cases, case delays, block time utilization, all the whole gamut of just a surgical program. It's not just robotics. That's what I love about robotics is because the eye is the magnifying glass is so focused on robotic surgery that we're helping change surgery in general in the whole hospital.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous. So what you're saying is the best practices that are being implemented to advance the robotic program are directly impacting the laparoscopy initiative, the open surgery even. I'm imagining that there's an effort to move open surgery to minimally invasive where appropriate. It just changes the culture, that's what I'm hearing you describe. Is that a fair assessment?
That's absolutely correct, and that's again, having been completely across the United States in multiple systems and from large system to small system, what we're finding is that the systems are moving patients towards surgeons who are more efficient,
right,
and have better outcomes,
right,
which is what we would want for our family,
right,
if they were to come into one of these systems.
Exactly.
So if you can provide better outcomes, less pain, faster recovery, shorter length of stay, less readmissions and complications, then it's a no-brainer. And if you can move those surgeons and change that culture in the hospital, again, it takes a physician champion, somebody who's going to be safe, somebody who's efficient, somebody who's cost effective, mm-hmm, and making those decisions and bringing the right people into the room. And then the other, having that effect on the OR and having other surgeons come in and saying, that's interesting, it's not the scary robot or the crazy cases that we remembered from 10 years ago.
Right, right.
And you make it routine. Yeah.
One of the things that we're seeing is that that culture that you've just described, that point of view, is evolving right now with some of our European colleagues, where the thought process has been historically urology and super complex cases are appropriate to roll the robot into the room. For all of the other procedures, just stay with laparoscopy. What you're describing in terms of the use of the robot across many other service lines on a regular basis is the direction that robotic surgery is going in the United States generally. However, you've described a range of benefits for robotic surgery, and I'm sure that many administrators and many laparoscopic surgeons would say, wait a minute, these cases can be done just as well laparoscopically. Why should I think about becoming a robotic surgeon, or why should these cases be done robotically? You've identified a number of potential benefits. What do we say to your colleagues who are lap or open surgeons who haven't gotten there based on the kinds of benefits that you are seeing as a robotic surgeon?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what we're faced with at every hospital or every, you know, new market that we come into and see people that are just starting to have the robot, you know, have a robot available. And the old guard that's usually completely against, or, you know, just very much stuck in their ways, and they do great surgery. There's no arguing when you look at my length of stays and my readmission rates and my pain scores, patient satisfaction scores, faster, you know, times to get into chemotherapy, less complications, less wound complications. And when your chief of surgery sees that your average length of stay for colectomies is less than 1.5 days across the board, you can't deny it.
Right.
And, you know, you have people looking, and other people are coming into the room now, and people are going to conferences. It's becoming the talk, and some people still boo-hoo it because it's the robot, and they don't want to do it. They're like, I'm a great laparoscopic surgeon. That's great. But you got to eventually open your eyes to the true data and drive your program based on data, not on feelings or emotion or the past. I mean, I think, you know, looking at the past is good and making a appropriate move from what you've learned from the past. And that's what we've done at St. Agnes Medical Center. We are very selective in who we want to let train up. We don't let any outside companies or vendors try to push us to who they would like to have train up. So we make that decision. I think the one thing you hit the nail on the head when you said that our European counterparts sometimes choose more the robot for complex cases, where they leave laparoscopic surgery for the routine cases. Now, the way that I look at this is that when we go through residency, surgical residency, and you learn how to do laparoscopic or minimally invasive surgery, you start with the basic cases. You start with laparoscopic appendectomies, then you progress to laparoscopic cholecystectomies. It's actually outlined in most surgical residency guidelines for advancement of laparoscopic skills. You don't start coming into laparoscopic surgery doing laparoscopic colectomies, gastric bypasses, you know, esophagectomies, or complex ventral hernia repairs. You start with the basics. So it just blows me away how people can think that they're going to use the robot for the most complex cases when they haven't even mastered it for the simplest cases.
It's a very important point there, and the answer to that is is what? What is the answer to that question? I don't know the answer to that question. How do you go from step one to step 10 without going to 2 through 9?
I think it's one is, again, having a robotic steering committee that is willing to stick to their guns and make guidelines for advanced cases versus basic cases, following closely a surgeon's progress and reviewing their outcomes, and then progressing along, having senior mentors in every subspecialty. We have heads of urology, gynecology, thoracic surgery, and general surgery in our hospital, and colorectal as well. They're all represented, and they're all looking at outcomes.
This is exactly the point. I mean, everybody is looking at outcomes in your institution, and everybody is rowing in the same direction here. This is what makes it possible to have this type of accomplishment. In the absence of, you've described a fully integrated top-down, bottom-up management and administrative integration with clinical, and you have a data evidence-driven background with regard to the program, and you have this evidence being used as the basis of decision-making relative to case selection and the advancement of the overall minimally invasive and robotic program. These are the cornerstones to achieve the kind of success you're achieving, it sounds like, if I'm describing this correctly. And the only other comment I would like to make, and I'd love you to respond to this, Russ, is you described what happens when the surgeons are trained only on basic level cases, your choles and some of your basic hernias, et cetera, talking about general surgery. What we see sometimes in academic medical centers is just the opposite, that the residents have an opportunity to work on very complex cases, but never have a chance to develop their skills on the basic cases. It creates a whole other set of problems because after they leave the academic environment and they get into the community-based environment, are they in fact prepared to do the basic cases? And the answer is, how would they when they've never done them? What do you think of that?
I completely agree. And that even goes for open surgery. It's funny how we're a small community-based hospital. I know we're associated with a larger scale system, but the general bread and butter surgeon coming out of training into a community-based system has to master the basics, of course. And that comes from residency and training, because the chiefs, like you said, are experienced or exposed to advanced cases, complex cases. And it leaves the interns who have, you know, or juniors with very basic surgical knowledge, skills, and system-based practices, letting them have the inguinals. Mm-hmm. When, in fact, it should be the chiefs doing the inguinals, because that's what they're going to be doing the majority of their career. As we know, cholecystectomies and inguinal hernias are the most common general surgical procedures performed across the United States. Perfecting those skills before you get out in practice, I think, is key. And that should go across the board from open surgery to laparoscopic surgery to robotic surgery.
That makes a big difference. I think you've articulated it great. Well, thank you. We've been speaking with Dr. Russ Martin, a robotic and laparoscopic general surgeon and medical director of robotic surgery at St. Agnes Medical Center in Fresno, California. If you have any questions for Dr. Russell Martin or would like to share comments with us, we'd love to hear from you at roboticdisclosure@gmail.com. You've been listening to Robotic Disclosure. Support for Robotic Disclosure comes from Kava Robotics International, the leader in robotic program consulting, serving hospitals in the U.S. and around the world. Visit kava-robotics.com. Robotic Disclosure is produced at Northfire Recording Studios in Amherst, Massachusetts. Theme music by the Verve Jazz Ensemble, verve-jazz.com.